You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is True Q, aka Q gets beat up by a girl.
Yeah.
I'm Matt from Tennessee.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Hey, Matt, how have you been?
I have been doing well. How have you been?
Not bad. I can't complain too much, at least. So let's see, when did we last have you on? I think it was a couple episodes ago, hence 3 months ago.
Yeah, and honestly, I can't even remember which episode that was. Oh, it was the Barclay one.
Realm of Fear.
Yes.
Realm of Fear.
Actually, it's odd. I'm actually pretty good at episode names for some reason, and it is generally just junk that I keep in my head. I should probably try to exercise that out. Because why should I know that just off the top of my head? It makes no sense.
For instances just like this right now.
Yeah. Yes.
That and quizzes at Star Trek Vegas.
You try. That's all that matters.
That alone is good enough for me.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so let's see here. James, a budget-friendly flight. It doesn't tell me what, but I can go to London next week for a week on Priceline for $995.99.
Right. Okay. Well, the only question really is, why aren't you?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I don't have $995, nor do I have a passport.
Permission to enter the country, in complete fairness.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Do you ever notice, Matt, do you ever cruise YouTube? You know, go through YouTube for things like road rage, or, because once in a while you get these on YouTube that you, as soon as you go there, they give you videos that it wants you to watch or it thinks that you would be interested in, and I keep getting these road rage videos, and I'm not sure why, but maybe it knows how I drive. But the point is, have you ever noticed how bloody friendly the Brits are when they're engaged in road rage? Oh, mate, you just cut me off, mate. No, mate, you were right there, mate. And it's like, here in the States, however, we would have had every word that had to be bleeped out. Then definitely would have ended up in a fight. Not just two people politely arguing with each other. Do you ever notice that?
Yeah. I guess I hadn't given it much thought before, to be honest with you, but yeah.
Yes, that's probably why I wouldn't be allowed into London, because it'd be too, too aggressive or something. What's wrong with this bloke?
There are plenty of people that will get into proper road rage here in England. It's fine. I mean, if you want to characterize that as a fine thing.
Yeah. Well, it could be worse. It could be like Russians. I mean, you ever see some of those goofy car crashes Russians get into and the way they yell at each other? It's funny. How about, let's talk about True
Q
here.
Yes, let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it. So, Matt, if you wish to read some more, it's there for you.
Oh, I'm not reading. I'm pulling this from memory. You know that. Come on.
Absolutely.
All right. The synopsis for tonight's show is, Q once again graces the Enterprise with a visit, claiming that a young intern aboard is really a Q. This is the sixth episode of season six of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was originally released on October 26, 1992, and written by Rene Echeverria. It was directed by Robert Shearer, and the guest stars include Olivia Dabo as Amanda Rogers, John Connolly as Orne Lote, and John DeLancey as Q. And, oh yeah, a couple of uncredited actors, the unnamed puppies as puppies 1 through 10.
So, and you did forget puppy number 11 that was a stand-in for Dr. Crusher. But anyway, go on.
Well, it wasn't a puppy.
That's true. All dogs are puppies.
Oh, that is true, yeah. So what did you guys think of this episode?
What about you? What did you think of it first? You guess go first.
Okay. Then why is it in the script that you haven't asked the question? We almost do this every single week.
You know, that's a good point. I think what I'll do is I'll go after that, say, and the guest goes first.
Or my thoughts are dot, dot, dot. So at least it runs
in. You know, in the beginning, I wanted to do it the Gamma Quadrant way, where they would say, and so what do we thought about this one? Well, I thought this was terrible. James, what did you think about this? Oh, I thought this was great. Matt, what did you think about this? Oh, I thought this was, you know what I mean. That's the way they did it. That's what that was originally the intent, but it didn't work out that way for us. But it doesn't matter. But Matt, you go first. Okay. You're important here, not me.
Well, I will have the brevity that you so urgently require here. I will say that I enjoyed this episode.
Okay, James.
Ooh. Okay. Worst Q episode yet? Question mark.
Okay. James is absolutely correct. Exclamation point.
Okay, well, hang on. When I was saying that, I kind of felt that surely you have to exclude Hiding Q from that, because Hiding Q must suck more. But I do have to say that this is an odd Q episode, I find. I find that the arc that Q goes through, in a way, I think that it almost doesn't allow this episode to be there. You know, Q has become a different character to the one we see in this episode, and having him revert back to his kind of season, season two kind of a persona, I found it a little bit odd, especially because towards the end of the season we obviously pick up on Tapestry. And I very much interpret that as a, you know, as Q actually being there rather than it being a figment of Picard's imagination, et cetera, et cetera. And I do feel that in my mind, the thread that now goes to Tapestry, where Q is helping Picard, you know, reassess his life, and then as you roll on to All Good Things, where you basically come full circle, I find that a very nice arc. And I find this episode is slightly out of sync. Maybe if it wasn't in the same season as Tapestry, maybe had it been last year, or shuffled around with a Cupid or something like that, it might have been okay. But I find that this one breaks the Q arc a little. Anyway, let me stop rambling.
Okay. You ever get that? You can't really explain why, but something just doesn't feel right. It's got cute puppies in it. I'll say that. So you can't go wrong with puppies, but and turning Dr. Crusher into a dog, well, you know, that's not cool, but it was cool. Does that make any sense? And you stay out of mine. Okay, yeah.
I thought that was fantastic.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was awesome.
And that she carried on like she hadn't even noticed.
Yep.
That's what I wonder. Did she notice?
No.
She didn't indicate that she did.
Right. But it was, you know, I can't imagine her not knowing. I just barked for some reason. Okay. So, we've been doing, the Enterprise has been doing really good things lately. You know, we've done a lot of work. So we're going to take on a passenger who's an intern, which generally means that you do the job to gain the experience, but you don't get paid. And since nobody on the ship gets paid, what's the reason for an intern?
Well, it's not about not being paid, right? It's about the learning experience. So I think that Amanda's coming on in the same sense that Wesley would have been on the ship during season one. So he's coming on board to do... It's not about not being paid, but it's about learning on the job.
And he definitely did that.
Wesley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he got to fly the ship way before he ever went to the academy.
True. Although, obviously, Amanda Rogers doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, my wife and I are thinking about going...
What's the distinction between...
Hold on, you'll have to say that again, Matt.
Well, are you asking the distinction between an intern and a student?
Well, I know. I mean, a student is, you know, you go to the academy, you learn, and then you go to do the intern, the actual work, which equals out free labor for the company. But yeah, I mean, I get that part, but nobody gets paid. And she beat out hundreds to get this opportunity. So, you know, even though she doesn't really know what to do with her life. So, but welcome aboard the Enterprise. Let's hope Commander Riker keeps his hands off you.
I mean, which he does. And good for him.
And yeah, that was, it was bizarre.
Yeah, to his credit, yeah, he doesn't approach her in that way at all.
No. In fact, he actually pushes her away. That was... I couldn't believe that. That's just an outrecker that we know. I don't know. Especially since she's not a commissioned officer. There's no reason he couldn't have her in bed by noon. But,
well,
okay.
Well, what age do you think she was supposed to be in this?
15.
No.
I think she was supposed to be 15. So I think that your previous comment, Lou, that there's no reason why she shouldn't have her in bed by noon, was inappropriate. I mean, she's not gone to the academy yet, right? So, you know, I think she's like a Wesley season one. I think she's like a 15-year-old.
So I put her somewhere closer to 18, I think. But even then, it would still be a little early for Riker.
Although in real life, she was... let me see. 18, 16,
she was
23 at the time, so...
Yeah, 23.
I feel better anyway. Jeez.
You had to rewrite your script.
I didn't even consider anything. Like, maybe she's not in the academy yet because she was real young, but...
Hang on. Who are you saying is 23? The actress or the character?
Yes.
Yeah, the character... Actress. Is only 18, according to the good people at Memory Alpha.
Okay, well, I'm still doing better. Anyway, oh, that was bad. So, do you think, maybe Picard, okay? So maybe Picard had a chat with Riker, and it went something like this: "Look, Will, I get it. You're the hot stud on the ship. I stand in awe of your power. But maybe you can, you know, leave this girl alone. What do you say?" Maybe. I mean, she's young. She's inexperienced. And which, you know, I know you're thinking about giving her all you got. But hey, not this time. Resist her, Will. Resist her. That's how it went. Thank you, number one. You're excused.
So there are a couple of things that I could always... I mean, first of all, let me just... I'll mention something about this show, which is I actually thought that Riker did kind of hang around her quarters a little bit too long. To begin with, I thought that was a little bit odd. So he did kind of hang around a bit. But then the other thing that's just surprised me, and it has really has put me on the back foot here. The actress that plays Amanda Rogers is now 50. She's 50 in like 4 days' time. And wow. Doesn't time go fast?
Doesn't it, though?
Well, let's just mention Olivia Dabo here. Did anybody watch Wonder Years when they were younger?
No, I don't. I'm not aware. Would this have been pre-TNG or afterwards?
Pre. I think that show was on in the late 80s.
Yeah, I think so, too. Was she on there?
She played the main character, Kevin Arnold. She plays his older sister.
Ah, okay. All right.
But she was also in Wayne's World 2, apparently, which I hadn't realized until I looked it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. So let's pretend for a second. Let's go back to Wrecker and how things seem a little strange. Let's pretend that we didn't watch this episode, but we can only listen to it as they're arriving at her quarters. And he says, "This is it." And she says, "Is this for me?" And he says, "Yeah, it's all yours." And then she comments, "It's so big."
Look at you.
Of course I mean her quarters.
Now, Lou, the only thing I can now think of is that you have indeed listened to this in the car without the visual.
I have indeed listened to this in the car. But no, this doesn't make my usual car rides. But there was a day that I was happy in my job, and I used to listen. And I used to listen to podcasts all day, every day, until that went away. And so, no, I remember hearing this many times.
Well, that makes the whole puppy thing much more creepy.
Yeah, they did show up right there, and that's another thing. Okay, let's get serious about something real quick here. So the she mentions about her zoo. And that, you know, three dogs, that isn't too much, is it? And no, I would say we have three dogs here, so that's cool. But then, all of a sudden, 10 puppies show up. And that isn't really my question. My question is, she tells them they have to leave, and then they start disappearing, except for the last two. And then she puts them down, and they finally disappear. Was she using her powers, or do these puppies have the power of Q too? What did you guys think that meant?
Puppy Q. I like that.
Puppy Q. Because she said she hadn't used powers except for when that thing almost fell on Wrecker's head and she whisked it away. But other than that, why did these puppies just disappear? Or why did they get there in the first place? Because she was totally stunned that they arrived. Could that be Q that brought them and she put them away?
Well, the way I interpreted it was that she wasn't in control of her powers, and as a result, things that she was thinking or that she was wanting were kind of happening almost out of her control. So, I think that she indeed did bring them, but she wasn't bringing them into existence or sending them away, you know, with proper, you know, proper control or proper force.
So she was using a power that she really didn't realize.
That's
she
right.
Had.
Yeah, that's how I got it too. Is that she, yeah, the puppies came unwittingly. She didn't mean to do that, and she may have away willingly, but she just want to have to explain that later when they asked about it. So she's like, no, that was the first time in the cargo bay.
Hmm. Yeah, there was that time I had puppies in my room, but
puppies went. Yeah, but the puppies are no more.
So actually, she has used her powers in the past, but she's just not prepared to be grilled of what she did with the puppies.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, either way, you know what I would have done is I would have dropped to the floor and spent the next hour getting licked. That's all I gotta say.
So, okay. good.
We learn something about you every time we do this.
Absolutely. Something that makes James go, I don't want to go into DS9.
Yeah, I'm not a dog person. And recently, as in like 2.5 years ago, we recently got cats, and I'm quickly becoming very much aware that I'm not a cat person either. I'm just unfortunately sharing my house with a bunch of ungrateful animals at the moment.
I can't stand cats. I'm a dog man. But she has her zoo. I've got my zoo. We have 3 dogs, 4 guinea pigs, 2 gerbils, 1 hamster, and 3 different kinds of fish tanks. Alpha or beta fish, cold freshwater fish, and a 3rd fish. I really don't even know what they are. So, I got a zoo here. Okay, so, her first job.
That brings us to the opening credits.
Yeah, really, there you go. How do we spend so much time on nonsense? But we do. Anyway, her first job is check tricorders and put the bad ones
aside. No. Too far. I have a problem with this episode being called True Q before it's revealed that Q is in the episode. I think that's a spoiler. And everyone knows who John DeLancey is. And I know that he has to get Bill in somewhere. I find it very frustrating that it kind of gets spoiled by the credits rather than through the storytelling. So, you know, I've already referenced Tapestry, which is a great, 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 great episode. You don't see Q. You don't know that Q's there until he steps forward. Whereas here, you're told that the episode's called True Q. Now, no one's sitting here really thinking that it's about waiting in line. And everyone knows that it's about the Q. And you've also got John DeLancey credited. Now, in fairness, he's not credited as starring as quote-unquote Q. But nonetheless, I find it frustrating that this kind of gets given away, where from a writing perspective, we're supposed to still be, you know, uncertain as to who this woman is and why she has powers that are almost Q-like. And they've called the episode Q, True Q. And I think it's unfortunate. Mm.
Really? I mean, is it? I guess I don't quite get. Do you mean just the name gives it away?
Before we know, on screen, it basically says in big blue writing, oh, by the way, this episode is about the Q. You've seen something funny. The woman's probably a Q. And I think that from a storytelling perspective, that's not a great way to open the show. Because, you know, right at the beginning, we know it's about the Q. We know the Q's turning up. And when he does turn up, there's no dramatic surprise there at all. We just know that, oh, it's Q. We know. We've been expecting him. I would have preferred had they had a more nondescript title and had they either introduced Q in the teaser or not credited him. And I know that that's not the easiest thing to arrange, of course. I thought it would have been a better reveal.
Well, maybe I still don't understand, but how is that reveal different than Hide and Q, Q Who, Deja Q, Cupid, or in the future, the Q and the Grey?
I think it's a criticism of a lot of episodes that choose to have Q in their name.
Right, I think they shouldn't do that.
So,
most of those episodes, he shows up before the title, correct? You know,
I believe that is true. I don't think it's all of them that he does. I think Cupid, for example, I don't think he does. But certainly Deja Q he does, and you know, not just Q, but also, you know, little Q turn shows up just out of shot before we're told the episode name is Deja Q. But the way they do it in Tapestry is wonderful, right? Which is he gets revealed in the last seconds of the teaser, whereas here he gets revealed eventually, but we already know that he's in the episode, so. I don't know. I don't really have a good solution other than don't spoil. If it's a dramatic point that this particular character is going to be in the storyline, don't spoil them on the credits 15 minutes previously.
Okay. How about if they named it somewhere between P and R? Somewhere between P and R. Anyway.
No, true sorry. Alphabetical nondiscrete letter.
Yeah, there you go. Alrighty. Okay, so as I was mentioning, her first job on the ship is to check these tricorders and put the bad ones aside. And there are 10 tricorders, one for each puppy.
But you know, I like this because it's an aspect of life on the ship that you don't think about. Yeah, there would have to be somebody checking these tricorders periodically.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I never thought about that.
And while her first tricorder was facing away from her, so I'm not sure if it was scanning maybe the cameraman, but who knows? But she eventually figured it out and got it right and learned how to turn it around and begins to talk about her parents and her adoptive parents. And turns out her parents were killed. Okay. Do I have to put spoiler alert in this 30-year-old episode?
No.
I believe we'll be spoiling it here pretty soon anyway.
Yeah. Okay, good. I was getting worried there. Maybe I'm 3 years off of 30 years, but still, 27 years old. Anybody who's listening to this right now, if you haven't seen the episode True Q, stop what you're doing now. But wait, don't stop now. Come back after you watch the episode.
Don't worry, we'll wait.
Yeah, we'll wait. All right, so taxes over, and you're right, the government is shut down. The TSA, I was just on an airplane, and the TSA workers are really cranky because they're having to work and not get paid. Okay, that's pretty messed up. Okay, guys, now that you're back, we're going to go on. So, her parents turned out to be Q, and they were killed, obviously. So, I've got to ask this question. How's that even possible? Is there a hierarchy in the Q system, Q continuum, where there are some Qs that are more important and can make bigger decisions than the lower ranking Qs?
I would say there would have to be. I mean, we saw that before where the Q took Q's powers away. So obviously mm-hmm. there's some sort of governing body saying who's allowed to do what.
So, you know, and it's amazing because later on, we learn that they will not allow a Q to commit suicide. But he even says, yes, we still do executions of the worst Q, I assume. People who really deserve to be killed. Not wanting to be Q anymore, is that enough to kill him?
So, but who got
Amanda's
killed?
Parents.
Amanda's parents. Well, I kind of thought that doesn't this link into the end where they're given the choice as to whether or not they walk away and never use their powers again, or get brought into the fold. I kind of thought that, to me at least, it sounded as if Amanda's parents kind of were allowed to step out, but they probably crossed the line by, you know, either having the kid or having the kid and also still using their powers to an extent. And at that point, they kind of got taken out by the tornado. Now, why is it a tornado? I mean, it seems odd that if you are the Q continuum and you're completely, you know, able to do whatever you like under all circumstances, why do you have to disguise it through a tornado and leave such clumsy fingerprints over this as a hit job? You know, why don't they just disappear out of existence and everyone that's ever had any contact with them, that gets erased? Surely that's not beyond their power.
I would say not. Why not a little carbon monoxide? Why some insane thing like a tornado, which would have been modified by their own weather?
Also, and even witnesses as well. Witnesses and yes! Suspicious wind speeds. What? I mean, why?
Yeah. So, I mean, I find a contradiction in the whole continuum as between now and Voyager when we... I mean, yeah, they took his powers away. Why couldn't they just take their powers away and let him be human? And he was even talking about killing Amanda, too. If she doesn't accept us, we may have to do that.
Well, here's actually, I think I have a... I mean, maybe I've changed. I think I've spoken about Q in the past and the Q continuum in general, but watching this episode made me feel that, and also knowing about what comes later in DS9, it makes me feel like I don't really like the Q as an alien civilization. I think that they are good antagonists, and in particular good rivals for Picard, that basically allow him, Picard, to overcome various challenges. And I've said it many times in this episode already, but I think that the examples of Tapestry and also All Good Things are the best examples of how to use Q. Now, I would not feel shortchanged in any way, shape, or form if I didn't know anything about the Q continuum, how they did business, what their rules are, what they're allowed to do, what they're not, whether, you know, what their logistics are. You know, I honestly feel like I don't care. In fact, I almost want the Q to be on such a higher level that I wouldn't be able to relate to it. And what I want out of my Q is someone to challenge Picard at his level and ultimately push him forward in his development. That's all I want. I don't want to hear about Q having babies with other Qs or you know, a teenager growing up with superpowers. I don't need that within the Q realm. You can tell those stories through other aliens if you like, but I kind of feel that the Q would have been kept more special had they been kept more less exposed on their own civilization front. Mm-hmm.
So were you disappointed with the dirt road, the dog on the porch, or the scarecrow?
I mean, isn't... Surely everyone is, right? I mean, what does that mean? I mean, to me, it doesn't... I mean, there are two things that you can say there. It's either being obtuse for the sake of being obtuse, or you can say that it's not aligned into what your expectation would have been. And I don't think that clever enough to have made that... kind of, you know, a good representation of the Q continuum, or, you know, of the culture that they're trying to project. So, you know, it's almost as if you have to have the personification of God, you're putting a lot of responsibility on the writer to make sure that that comes off good. So why even do it? What benefit do you get by trying to crystallize that in a way?
Mm.
You prefer that they be a mystery.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Okay, so, go ahead. Yeah, if you got anything to add to that, Matt?
No, I was saying I hadn't really considered that before, but yeah, that's a valid point. I don't have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I never thought that way either, but I see your point of... It would have been better to keep him a mystery than... And obviously, they had to dumb down the continuum to a dirt road so Janeway could understand it. But, yeah, you're right. It would have been a better mystery. But then, how would Quinn explain what he goes through had we not gone along to see the continuum? So, I'm not sure. I still like that episode a lot, so... We'll talk about that in about 10 years. Okay.
If we pick up the pace.
It's if we pick up the pace. Okay, so today's preachy lesson, boys and girls, is be kind to our ozone. Because we just might need some barostatic filters. Because Amanda says she can't understand why they would go to such lengths to clean the air instead of regulating the emissions that caused the problem. I get it, Star Trek. I got your point. Thank you.
Okay, hang on. Before you criticize here, let me point out that the issues surrounding the ozone layer are generally fixed. right? So going, going back 30 years, you did have we had a significant problem regarding the ozone layer, and in particular, it would have been, you know, the type of stuff that we were putting out was specifically attacking it. Now, I'm not necessarily talking here about global warming. I'm talking about specifically the issue of, you know, the hole in the ozone, and that's generally been resolved with has it not?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, the ozone issue specifically, I believe, has been mitigated. But that's not to say that we don't have other environmental issues that need to be addressed.
Indeed, but you know, back in the day, the big thing was regarding the. Back in the day, the worry was that there was a hole in the ozone, and that was going to cause the issue, rather than the situation with respect to like greenhouse gases. So, to me, this did sound a lot more like the idea of there being, you know, the chemicals, the stuff around the. Aerosols and stuff like that that were being put in and really starting to bite away at the ozone layer itself.
Right.
Well, the thing is, it's not fixed. You can't fix that we know of. We can't fix the ozone layer. However, it's not being depleted as bad as it was, but it's still gonna be depleted, won't it? Isn't it?
No, I didn't think
it's not. You think we're done totally with all the gases that we still emit into the atmosphere?
No. Okay. So let me check. I've just gone over to a newspaper article. So ozone layer finally healing after damage caused by aerosols, UN states. So this is from this is from earlier this year, and they're talking about that there are continuous signs of improvement in the ozone layer, and that they expect it to be fully healed by. It's not fully healed yet, but they're expecting it to be fully healed by 2060. So we've stopped the damage and it's started to repair back.
I didn't know there was a repair.
Yeah,
back.
No, and it's part of the fact that, you know, we reach an equilibrium by having the ozone layer, and we ended up sending a lot of the chemicals up there that were attacking it. It started to get very bad and we stopped doing those chemicals. And then it's, you know, slowly but surely it's going to be repaired and be brought back. And if you think about the environmental challenges of the mid to late 80s, it was around the ozone. So in a way, we've got a 30-year-old time capsule here talking about the damages of the ozone. But where we stand now, 30 years down the line, is that it's pretty much not an issue anymore, because we have actually changed what we do in terms of emissions, and in particular the kind of... gases that we put out that are very harmful to the ozone layer. Now, there's a lot more to do on other areas, right? And issues regarding climate change will probably dwarf any concerns that we had about ozone layer. But on the particular one, we're in a much better position than when this episode aired.
Okay, that's cool. I did not know that there was even a possibility that it could repair itself.
Well, I mean, it repairs itself after we stop kind of stabbing it with whatever we're putting out. Like, I can't remember what exactly the main culprits were.
I think it was the chlorofluorocarbons, the CFCs. Mm.
Yes, you might be right. That rings a bell.
Yep. Good. So the ozone has some white blood cell. That's wonderful. Okay, so I guess the lesson isn't quite so bad, boys and girls. So, meanwhile, in a cargo bay, a canister almost falls on Riker when Amanda swats it away with two fingers. So, again, here's a question. How would that was obviously pushed by Q. How would he know that she would have even seen it at the right moment? And I guess the same question goes with the warp core breach that almost happened. Do you think he would have allowed Riker to be killed or the ship to be blown to pieces if she couldn't do anything about it?
That seemed to be the impression that he gave.
And I do like that. I do like the fact that when I don't know whether it was Crusher or whether it was Troy that was questioning him. And he was like, well, what if she wasn't a Q? He said, well, then I would have found that out. And it's very much a matter of fact, without any consideration whatsoever to, you know, the lives that would have been lost.
Well, yeah. Well, that's Q for you.
Does anybody else wish that it had been Worf under that? Just getting the thing dropped on him?
Of course not. Why would you want such a thing?
Well, I would have just loved to see his reaction.
We were Worfless, weren't we, this week?
Oh, yeah.
You're right. Maybe someday in the future we'll have something hurt Worf, but I don't think it's possible.
These cargo bays are just treacherous. I don't know why anybody goes in there.
Well, they're not as bad as the holodeck, so.
Maybe not.
Okay. So Amanda visits engineering, where now we're going to get a lesson on how much energy is harnessed in there. That's pretty cool. In the warp core, Data says that it was using 12.75 billion gigawatts. Or is it gigawatts? I'm not sure. Which is correct, Data or Doc Brown?
Well,
I assume that's not a serious question, is it?
Of course not. But I was hoping you'd know what it meant.
You only need 1.21 to go back in time, so I can't imagine that would be the same measurement.
Yeah. Yes. So 1.21 versus 12.75 billion. Is it gigawatts or gigawatts?
Right, it's gigawatts.
I posit that it's two different measurements.
It could be. You know, it depends. Well, it depends on what you're using as your device. Now, for a DeLorean, you don't need much, right?
No, I would say you would need more. I think a gigawatt is a lot more than a gigawatt.
That could be. That's possible.
It would have to be.
Yeah, it would have to be. And although later on, you could get 1.21 gigawatts from trash, like a can of beer, an empty can of beer, a banana core, and I can't remember what else Doc threw in that. But anyway,
that's a good point. They had the fusion reactor, which the Enterprise has one. I don't know now.
That's right. Okay. Oh, our little plutonium. Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, Doc, are you with us
yet? I am.
Do you know where we're at here?
I'm going to say yes and hope that there are no follow-up questions.
Okay. Do you want us to go back to the future?
Yes.
Okay. I still don't think he gets
it. I do get it.
Oh, okay, good.
But it probably has been 20 years since... I'm going to say 20 and then... That's, you know, I'm going to obviously completely be wrong based on the release dates. But I think it must have been 20 years since I watched Back to the Future. And I think I only watched the first, not the second or third.
Oh. Yeah. Really? That's sad. You got to watch them all three. And what you need to do is watch them one after the other. It's the best way to get it. Okay, so anyway.
All right.
So... just as the warp core is about to explode, Amanda puts up two hands and saves the day.
I have to admit, I liked this effect. I liked the core kind of glowing red and then fracturing. I actually thought that was a good effect for that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So at this point, Data and LaForge know there's something wrong with that girl. Or there's something up with that girl. Because they're like...
And there's something... There's certainly something wrong with those 10 tricorders that reckon that he's a human.
Yeah, no kidding. That's true. They're all bad. Okay, well, anyway, either way, we need to have a conference. Let's have a discussion about this. as Picard asks, what the heck was that? But then Q pops in and tells us the real story.
Didn't see that coming.
No. Nope.
Why?
Couldn't tell
why
you.
Why was Amanda not in this meeting?
Because it was about her. What are they going to do with her? I mean, she's now... Could she be a threat? Just because she's pretty and she's sweet. But could she be a threat? I mean, yeah, she saved a couple people. She saved the ship. She saved Wrecker. But still, she's got a power that we don't have. Could she be a threat? Isn't that typically when people don't understand something like that?
Usually when there are, when there are people like this, they end up in sick bay being given books to read about the schematics of the ship, don't they? Mm-hmm. Isn't that where we put most of the people with superpowers?
Mm-hmm.
Here's all the information you need to take over.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, you know, either that or put her in the brig, as if that would have mattered any. But they always seem scared of somebody who's more advanced than they are. So, but anyways, have a conference. And Q shows up, says she's Q, and he wants Picard to introduce him to her. So, now, Q did say that it was her decision if she wanted to become Q, stay Q, or something, right?
Well, I mean, in fairness, Q says a lot of things. I think at this point he's just trying to, you know, Q will say things, and then later on he'll accuse Picard of being naive, that, what do you mean, you thought we weren't going to kill her? So, you know, really, I wouldn't take what Q says as gospel.
Yeah. Well, she does have a choice. You can become a lame entity, or you and me, we could hit all the cool Q clubs. We'd be clubbing it all night long. Boy. Wouldn't you love to just kind of see what it is they could do before you make that choice?
Okay, yes, but from the show's perspective, I don't think they could show you anything. You know, the viewer wouldn't be able to be able to be shown it, right? So I don't know how they would pull it off.
All right. Well, anyway, Picard agrees to introduce the two, and he comes walking into her quarters, grabs her by the arm, and pulls her up. Not even a hello. Just lifts her off the chair.
Okay, a couple of things first, because we miss the fact that Picard obviously is in the conference room. He then gets transported to the ready room, and then he comes out, and then he talks to Data, and he talks to Data about Q, and Data behaves as if, yeah, I understand everything about Q, and at no point does Data go, what the hell are you talking about, old man? Which I would have thought he would have done.
Or maybe Q's look back at the conference. What? Yeah, Q's back. Or maybe look at the conference room saying, wait, didn't you go in there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think so.
Maybe the computer keeps a hold of Picard and Data knows everything. So, anyway. So, basically, you know, he says, he grabs her by the face and says, you know, you look like he was going to kiss her there for a second. But then he says, let's go. And she flings him across the room. The look on Q's face as he's sitting there going, a little phased, that was priceless. Even the follow-up, as he's, you know, talking about what just happened, he still has this dazed and confused look. How did that just happen on his face? I thought those were pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say, you go, girl, Q. Okay. So anyway, Q's boss sends his shadow to find out what's going on. That was kind of weird, wasn't it? I didn't get it there for quite a long time. It looked like just he stopped and started talking to nothing and then started walking on until we really see the shadow come up from nowhere and then the shadow disappear from nowhere. That was pretty creepy.
Well, that was the one scene that really stood out to me, too. Why is Q walking the corridors?
Mm-hmm.
And then has to have an audible conversation just to nobody. And then continues walking on. I was like, yeah. That's not what Q would do. But I don't know.
No. Once you threw him across the room, I think Q would have went to the bar somewhere, pounded down a few drinks, maybe left with the Q hooker. I don't know. Maybe. But anyway. But he says that we may not have to terminate her after all.
Oh, what wasn't right before this where he was having that conversation with Picard saying that she needs to start acting like a Q, and Picard looks at me and is like, I think she just did.
Yeah, she did, didn't she? That was awesome, man. But she does get to see her parents holding her as a baby. I thought that was really sweet, actually.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that there were no pictures or images of her parents from, you know, before they were killed.
Yeah. So it is interesting that, you know, she has that power. She could, and technically, if she was Q, couldn't she go back in time and save him?
Yeah. She's a Q. She can do anything. Mm. Anything she wants.
Hold on a second here. James?
Yeah, I'm him. I mean, she can do everything.
Oh, good.
Except cheat at those, okay. You know, those tests that Crusher wanted.
Yeah, she didn't. Yeah, she didn't do them right. Okay, no, I'm sorry. I couldn't see your little bubble in the Skype window, so I thought maybe you fell.
No.
Fell out of the train. Okay, you can't fall off the bus. So anyway, about that, Dr. Crusher gives her an assignment. She needs to be telling me what the spore, whatever it is, does at each phase of the way. You know, when it grows a little bit this way, let me know the mitosis. When it grows a little bit more, let me know. Even though I have no idea what I just said, I had an idea of what she wanted. But thanks to Q, he shows her how to get the work done in no time. Just poof, there it was. Which obviously isn't what Crusher wanted, and says, I gotta do this all over again.
So it's odd. I think that Crusher goes kind of back and forth a bit on this episode, because she starts, obviously she gets introduced to Amanda very early on, and then when Q turns up, she's very much against Q getting involved. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh no, we're going to help you with Q, and you know, this is a man that you can deal with. And then at this scene, it's don't deal with him. Look at it, you know, why are you getting in the way? So she's kind of going back and forth a lot with Q.
Yeah. But we do get a second when Beverly really has to think about something. Would she bring Jack back? And then I wondered, what if she was able... really give a proper answer to that question, would she? Because if she could save Jack from dying in the first place, everything that happened from that point on would be different. So is her life better without him, or would her life be better had she been able to save him?
So things I came around to thinking very, very quickly on this, that this is an inappropriate question to ask someone you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think straight away, because there are, you know, it is very, very complicated. And what exactly is she asking here? She's not offering to save Jack, right? It's not as if, well, if you want it, I can make it happen. It's very much a very, very personal thing that Crusher's lived through and has lived through for the last 20-odd years, maybe. That this particular teenager is using as a thought experiment. And, you know, whatever the situations, and I think that there's a big debate that you can have around this. But I very quickly got to the point of, who the hell is she to ask this of Beverly? I mean, really?
Well, she was basing this, if you could have anything you wanted... And that's what being Q is. You could have anything you wanted. Of course, she probably could have picked something better. You know, could you be a different person?
Yeah, but the kind of questions you're asking if you're going to give unlimited power to, you know, like a Crusher would be like, I don't know, maybe 40-year-old or whatever, who has gone through loss, who has given birth, who has kind of spent a lot of time healing hundreds of thousands of people, you know, with their medical research. Mm-hmm. The kind of questions you're asking, and the questions you're posing when you're asking, you know, what could you do with unlimited power, is very different to the questions you're asking when you ask an 18-year-old girl who has the hots for Riker, hey, what would you do with unlimited power? Because I think that from her perspective, it pretty much starts and ends with Mr. Riker in his lovely suit.
Mm-hmm.
At which point I think, you know, child, go away, and I would have stabbed her down. And I think that's what, you know, that's what Crusher should have done.
Well, at the same time, Amanda was, you know, she's presented all of a sudden with the opportunity to possibly bring back her parents. And I think she was trying to think through on that as, you know, now that she has this opportunity, should she? And she was trying to get a similar perspective from Dr. Crusher. You know, so I think she was just trying to think it out loud and try to, you know, say, you know, is this something that I should even consider? You know, is this something you would consider if you had this power?
Actually, so I actually think the question of whether or not she should have brought back her parents is a simpler one. You know, I think that is kind of it's very easy to answer yes to that, in my opinion. Now, I think that from the story perspective, it's unlikely that the Continuum or Q himself would have allowed it. But, you know, really what has happened in the life of, you know, of those you leave behind? What has happened since her parents died? Well, you know, she was obviously orphaned and then she got brought up. And if she's now in a position, you know, she basically encapsulates the entirety of the life that these guys had missed. So in a way, I find it easier for her to be able to bring them back, because it's basically just checking in on someone who would have, you know, the only people that her parents would have affected was really, you know, her. Whereas the situation with Jack is different, because obviously Wesley's involved and Picard's involved, and there are so many more people, I feel, involved in that, rather than just this group of Q runaways, who also were murdered as well, which kind of, to me, it feels like bringing them back would be undoing an injustice at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think it is so easy, even for her, because we don't know her past. We don't know her backstory after her parents were killed. Here's a question. Let's say any loss in my past, after that loss happened, you go on, and then you become a different person because of that loss. Mm-hmm. Now, what would happen if in the future you are given the opportunity to go back and change that loss? It's you, like you said, James, it's very easy to say, hell yeah, yeah, I'd do that. You know, I lost a brother when he was 12 years old, and I was 8. You know, he was my big brother. He was my best friend, and then he was gone. And then the brother younger than him, who was still another older brother, started pounding on me, beating me up for no reason, when that brother I lost would protect me. So, what would it be like if I could say, bring him back? However, because of life beyond that point, what if my life was worse than it was because of that? What if he had lived and somewhere along the line, he became a really terrible person, and I went with him on a multi-state killing spree for some strange reason. Not to say he ever would, he was never that kind of boy. But what if bringing him back would actually be a mistake? Then, would you revisit that question again, and this time decide to allow that person to die in 1977? It's a tough question. And that's, God, I hate, ooh, it's just creepy thinking of how you would answer that question beyond, hell yeah, hey, I miss him like crazy. I would do anything to have him back. I'd do anything to have my parents back. But I wouldn't know what the results would be.
I think there's a distinction here, though, between bringing somebody back versus preventing their death to begin with. I was under the impression that they were that she was considering bringing her parents back, like, today, you know.
Today.
Instead of preventing them from having been killed before, just here on the Enterprise, I want my parents to be here now. Same thing for a Crusher. Maybe not necessarily go back and prevent Jack's death, but, just have Jack be alive here now, suddenly.
Yeah, I get that point, but then I still believe it's the same question of how would your life be changed in the future because that person is all of a sudden here and they weren't before. Is the pain of losing them from 1977 to 2025, yeah, from 2019 to 2025, I'm going to live a certain life. Now, if I brought him back today, it's going to be a different life. Would it be better or would it be worse? No matter how you look at it, that's got to be one hell of a tough question. Unless you could get a preview, a glimpse of what lay ahead.
All right, it's the life you haven't lived yet, so... Yeah,
you never know what it would be. Yeah. And then when you bring him back, let's say I brought him back. Is he going to be 12 years old again? Or would he be... 53? So, it's like, does he come back with 53 and then what? As if he had lived all these years? Would everybody know him? Or they'd say, well, who's your friend there? There's so many goofy questions that you have to have answered before you could ever do something crazy like that.
Have you seen this new show that's on called Manifest?
Yes, I have.
It's kind of a similar thing. It's like, it's as if the people on that plane are... Doc, are you familiar with it?
No, I'm afraid not, no.
So the premise in the pilot episode, a plane takes off and just disappears for 5.5 years. And then suddenly it's landing at JFK or wherever it was. And the people on the plane have no... It was just a normal flight for them. But when they land, all of a sudden it's 5.5 years later. All of their family had thought they had died and, they had moved on with their lives. Yep. So now all of a sudden these people are essentially back from the dead. And I like one of them because one of them was, a twin. So
yeah, 9 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that.
The boy is 9 years old, but now his twin sister is suddenly 14. So it's just kind of a similar thing, all of a sudden somebody's just brought back from the dead. How do you deal with it? But
yeah, the one lady, she went on and was dating some other man, and all of a sudden her husband comes back. Boom. What do you do? That's bizarre. And so yeah, there you go. It's a Manifest issue.
Well, I'll technically describe that as a USS Bozeman issue, but here we go.
There you are. Yeah. Yeah, especially after all those. Now, see, that's a thing. That's 75 years. But for Manifest, like you said, it's been 5 years. But for everybody on the airplane, it was 2.5 hours. And beyond a really terrible turbulence, which obviously was a wormhole of some kind. Well, I don't know if we really got that. But don't you think that would have been, Matt?
That seems to be the leading theory in my mind anyway. They haven't explained it yet.
Yeah. So we're waiting for season 2 to come out. So anyway.
By the way, it's very easy though to have that happen and still be within scientific fact, right? All you need is you need time dilation on the airplane. So if the airplane happens to go very, very fast or was it has to go very, very fast.
I was going to say, you need near relativistic speeds, don't you?
Indeed. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you need to go very, very fast, or the Earth has to be within a much, much higher gravity well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's, they never do that in Star Trek, though, right? They never have the issue of...
No, never.
You know, when you do go close to the speed of light, you're actually aging much, much slower than everyone else is around you. Except right. I seem to remember that in the book, one of the books they had this brought up. It wouldn't be that great, right? If you're on a 5-year mission, you come back and it's been 75 years and everyone that you know is dead.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah, and of course, once they get back, the government detains them all, segregate, you know, puts them away for a while, trying to make sure they're not aliens or something. So anyway, let's go back to Star Trek.
Yeah, well, where
so
were we?
We need to deliver the live specimen to Tagra. Oh, hey, did I forget to mention that Tagra issue that, you know, their ozone is depleting and so they need help?
Oh.
I think I totally spaced that part off, didn't I? Because they really don't talk much about it. So I think it's a planet where everybody's going to be dying soon if they don't fix their ozone.
Oh, just a bit of trivia that forgot to mention earlier. I think they said this was in the Argolis cluster. The yeah. last time we heard that was in I, Borg, which was also written by Rene Echevarria.
Ah, he must be from that cluster. You know, you write what you know, right? You write about what
Absolutely.
You know. So. Okay, so did you notice the Targaryen or whatever they call them, with the four holes for a nose?
Really good sense of smell.
I was thinking, you can't light, you know, you can't let any out around him because he's going to know where it came from. We call that in our job crop dusting because what's funny about a noisy casino is that you can walk around and basically crop dust and no one would ever really know it. Until you've already left the area. So, I hope none of my coworkers hear that. So, Amanda Parent died in Topeka, Kansas by a tornado that got past the weather modification net. It was the only destruction. It came, it saw, it conquered. And then it disappeared. And we find out it was the Q that did it. And yet, he still wants this girl to go with him. Trust me. I'm not as bad as the people... as the other Q who killed your parents. Anyway. So. Oh, hey, I forgot to ask. What kind of dog was Beverly, anyway? I mean, it was really long ears. But do we know what kind of species of dog that was?
I was wondering about the breed, too. I meant to look that up. I didn't.
Yeah, what am I thinking? I've got Memory Alpha right here.
It wasn't in Memory Alpha.
Look for it. It wasn't?
I didn't see it. Maybe.
Now, I find dogs weird.
Yeah. I do too.
Because if you think about the difference in size and shape and appearance of dogs across the dog kind of, you know, genus
kingdom,
and it's not it's not the equivalent here of saying, you know, there are tigers and there are kittens, you know, it's a much closer knit than that, right? So the genetic differences between, you know, the dogs is the equivalent as the genetic differences between, like, the, you know, the domesticated cats, and I find it odd mm-hmm. that dogs, and it must be kind of, it must be something very unique to them that there's such a variety in what you would deem a dog. And indeed, there's such a variety in what you would deem a dog that can reproduce with other dogs. So you can have mm-hmm. dogs 50 times the size of other dogs, and that's still compatible. And I find that so weird. I don't think there are any other animals where this is where this is as true.
You're right. A skunk is a skunk. There's only one skunk that I know of. Only one raccoon. Only one tiger. I mean, Yeah, only one elephant.
I mean, I know that tigers and lions, they can procreate.
And bears, too. Oh, my.
Saw that coming.
That's my part. That's my role on this show, is to, you know, bring up things, stupid things like that.
Okay.
All right. So Amanda and Q play hide and seek. Could this episode really get any worse?
Oh, this bit's fine. What's wrong with this bit?
Okay. Okay. Maybe them standing on the star drive section of the Enterprise was pretty
cool. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Exactly. That was
And him hiding in a box is fine. And then him hiding in a warp core is fine.
I'm surprised Riker. Yeah. Riker. Huh?
Well, I was going to say that effect of Q sticking his head out of the warp core, that was that cheesy effect. That could have done a little bit better. But they made up for it right away by taking him outside the ship.
Right. But how about LaForge in that instance? I mean, don't you think, as uptight as LaForge is, he would have said, Q, get out of there! Or something like, the warp core can't handle that kind of stress. Or, you know, something stupid. But anyway. But what else can she do? I know what she can do. She can abduct Commander Riker and whisk him away to a fantasy world. And normally, Riker would have been all for it. But today, Riker's a prude. And so this episode loses 2 points because of that. But then, with a whisk of the hand, she makes Riker go crazy. And so the Riker we know and love is back. But they only get 1 point back for that because it's not real.
It's real to her for a while. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say, I think there are a couple of questions that I'm going to be generous and say are almost asked in this episode, which is about, is it really fulfilling to have your wishes come true if you ultimately have no potential for failure? So, you know, if you're controlling someone to fall in love with you, or if you have total control, so that you cannot fail, do you get as much satisfaction from that? Do you get the satisfaction for courting someone and falling in love if it's, if it is a fact, if they're programmed to do so, or if you have control over them? And I think that's a relatively interesting topic. And then we also have the other one later on in the episode, which is that, can you help yourself using the power for good, even if you know that it might be for the greater ill. And I think that this episode kind of skates around these, and I would have liked them to have perhaps digged a little bit more into those questions, because I think on the first one, really, Amanda goes from thinking, hey, I'm going to get him to fall in love with me, to, oh yeah, but it probably doesn't really feel that right if I'm, if it's not real. And they just move on a bit too quickly for my mind.
Yeah, it seems like she learned that lesson real fast. There wasn't. Yeah, it would have been nice if they'd fleshed that out a little bit more.
Well, they're running out of time, I think.
Well, and also when they learn the other lesson at the end, which is, are you really able to stay back and not use your powers? Which is, I think they made Riker, if I'm not mistaken, do the same thing in Hide and Q, right, where he couldn't use his powers. At least then, I think they gave him 8 minutes not to use his powers. Whereas here, it is literally, she goes from saying, I ain't going to do it, to, okay, then.
All she did is walk onto the bridge.
Yeah. I mean, so it doesn't feel like she would have really held up to much interrogation or people trying to put her under any pressure to use her powers.
Do you think she did it because Riker was on the planet? What if Riker was on the bridge? Would she have done it then?
To be honest with you, I think that I don't think she should have done it, to be honest. I honestly don't think that she should have done it, because unlike Riker in Hide and Q, I don't think she does go through this slope of getting drunk on the power. And also, as a character, she's never had these powers up until very, very recently. So I would have thought, as a character, she would be much better placed to turn this offer down and basically to say, look, I'm going to go back to my old human self. I won't use this. So I almost feel that the episode is forcing us to wind up early. So I kind of don't even buy that she would have used it under these circumstances. So I generally just think it is just a, oh, is that the time? Wind up the story, move on to next week. So, I don't have much to say as to whether or not it would have been different with Riker on the ship or not, because I generally think it's out of character regardless.
Well, if Riker had been there, you know, he probably would have mentioned that the lesson that he learned is, look, don't do it. They don't want this. The people on the planet don't want you to just fix their problem for them. They're going to resent you for it. They're going to say, take it back.
Okay. All right, well, and like you said, she does fix the Tagra issue. Again, that's twice I've talked about Tagra in this whole episode, when it should have been more pronounced, but whatever. So I guess that's it. What did I miss, James?
I do not know.
I can't think of anything. Okay, then. I guess that's it.
There was a comedy note that I think they missed out on back at the beginning of the episode. I forget who it was that they had called Beverly to call her away for something. The guy calls and says, you wanted to be told when Sustance Starts was ready. And I guess I'd seen Spaceballs one too many times. I kept waiting for her to go, yeah, so?
It's ready.
Oh, there you go. That's the bit where there's a really strange instruction that Picard gives to Riker. And it's like, Beverly's going to need this, this containment field set up. And he goes, right, I'll get onto it straight away. And then kind of does nothing. It's a really weird thing that's halfway through the episode for some reason.
He's done that before. I mean, there was an episode, I can't remember straight out, but somebody says, Commander, can you alert somebody that something is ready? He goes, acknowledged. Then he just sits there. Like, maybe he's one of those guys, he puts it off until the last second and then gets it done. Maybe.
Yeah, I just thought okay. That would have been funny, You wanted to know when the containment field was ready. Yeah, and? The containment field's ready.
Containment field is ready. You're really a spaceball. You know that, don't you? Golly, geez, sir. Yeah, thank you. Anyway. Okay, so then I guess it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being pretty close, and 5 being unrealistic.
Okay, let me go first.
Yeah,
because
please.
I don't want to watch it. Because I think I came in too negative on this. I was actually going to give this episode 2 out of 5, but I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 instead. I think that this is just a middle of the road episode. I think that we have revisited a lot of the concept of Q. We're revisiting, we're reheating some of the ideas we've seen before. I don't like that they keep lifting up the skirt of the Q continuum. I would prefer that to remain kind of out of sight. But having said that, right, it's a pleasurable story that they tell. I think that there's nothing wrong at all with the guest stars this week. John Delancey is great, and he even mentions that, hey, isn't it good to be here for one of these great speeches that Picard gives? And kind of over the last couple of Q episodes, you realize that, yeah, that's true. You kind of like, the Q episodes are good for a bit of comedy, and you get usually a decent Picard monologue halfway through it. So this is an enjoyable episode, if a little bit hollow, Speaking about it and talking through some of the issues, overall, I don't think they did that bad a job. And look, if they revisit the issues of Hiding Q in this episode, so we don't have to go back and rewatch Hiding Q, you know, maybe that's a good thing as well.
Okay. All right, then. I think we should leave this one on a high note. You know, at least we should try, so I'll go next. It's just silly. I'm not that impressed with it, to be honest. Maybe it's disappointing since we come off of two pretty good episodes, and then the one before that was an abomination, whatever. The story kind of stinks to me. I just don't get it. I don't understand why we even needed it to begin with. A Q that doesn't know she's Q. Had they done more about her, maybe it could have done better. But it was just so forced and quick. Couple things that it's really strange. Then they say, oh, by the way, you're Q. And then that's it. She's gone. But the puppies were adorable. Even the Dr. Crusher dog was cute. But they can't save the rest of the episode. And the show seems another rehash of when, like you said, James, when Riker was offered a Q job in the Continuum and turned it down. But for a while, he did enjoy it, even calling Picard Jean-Luc. It wasn't until that moment, oh, so we're on a first-name basis now, huh? That Riker began to realize this is not good. And he resisted it. He turned it away. Amanda can't do that. She couldn't. Because she didn't want anyone getting hurt. And I still don't know what would have happened if Riker would be dead, would the ship had been destroyed, would the Tagrins been erased. We don't know, because she saved them all. So, I'm going to have to say, each puppy is a little bit less than 1/4 of a point. And since there were 10 puppies, I was thinking a 2.5. Yeah, about 1/4 of... 2.5. Yeah, that makes sense. 10 puppies, a quarter point for each puppy. So this show epic gets a 2.5 for me. It was between that and a 2, perhaps a 3, but I'll go in the middle. 2.5. So, all right, Matt, now tell us why we're wrong.
Okay. Well, Q episodes are staples of Next Gen. I mean, they have what, an average of one every season. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, they got to have them in here at some point. So this was as good an episode as any to have him in, I suppose. Which, you know, looking at, he was actually in 3 episodes within this 1 year, because his next appearance is on DS9 in Q-less, and then he comes back later in here for Tapestry. So he actually had a busy year.
Oh, I'm sure Q keeps busy. Anyway,
I am surprised nobody asked about Vash, because that was the last episode we saw them in was in Cupid, correct? I'm surprised nobody even mentioned her about that. But okay. Anyway, but as an episode,
technically in the timeline, this happens before Q-less.
Correct.
So that's not that's not yet happened. Q seems to be able to handle two women at the same time, it appears.
You go, Q. Oh, no, that's not what you meant. I'm sorry. Anyway, go on, Matt.
But, you know, as an episode, like I said, when this came out, this was in 92, so I was, I don't want to say how old I was at that time. I was young. And this is another one of those episodes where they kind of give you the outsider's perspective. Somebody who comes on new to the ship, wants to fiddle with all the toys. So, you know, it's one of those, another one where I'm able to relate to it because I want to be that person too. So, I can see where you guys are coming from, that the story doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't have any real stakes in it. And it is kind of a rehash of of hide and Q, but boy, where am I going with this? No, you guys are right. This episode's bad. No. But
all right, what's your rating?
Oh, my rating. Well, despite all of that, I actually enjoyed this episode. This is one that I'll watch again if it comes back on. I love the scene where they go outside the ship, although I don't know what she's looking at, because based on where the camera's positioned, it looks like she's standing on the back edge looking backwards. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful shot. It's a real close-up of the ship that you never get to see. So I really appreciate the fact that they did that. So, you know, as a whole, this one is not a bad one for me. I liked it. I'm actually going to give this one a 4 out of 5.
Hey, I guess that's right. All right. Good job. Well, then, as typically happens for us, James, at six episodes in, the guests still like Star Trek more than we do.
Okay. Very reasonable.
Thought you'd like to know. So, Matt, thanks for coming on, and we should be talking to you sometime. We're going to try and do it next week and try and get into some kind of schedule.
Sounds good. Always a pleasure, guys.
You bet. So thank you for coming on. All right, James, any last words, sir?
No, not for me. Thank you for joining us this week. And next week, course, it is Rascals.
Yes, like you said.
A transporter malfunction transforms the crew into children.
Are you here to relieve me of duty? I am still Jean-Luc Picard.
And a powerless young captain is about to lose his ship to hostile aliens.
Computer, deactivate all command functions. Authorization, Riker Omega 3.
We have secured the bridge.
Stripped of command, can Picard stop a savage attack?
I will execute every child on this ship.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Join us next time as we review episode 7 of season 6, and that will be Rascal. So take care and good night, all. Say good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night, guys.